I tell you to say hello to Jason for me, but he'll be in Elysium. You won't. The sorceress's eyes rolled up in her head. She stopped moving. Piper glanced back at her wood-armored allies. How about we dump her? Good call! The seven maidens shouted in unison. They marched forward, lifted the body of Medea, and tossed it unceremoniously into the fiery pool of her own grandfather. Piper wiped her bloody dagger on her jeans. With her swollen, stitched-up mouth, her smile was more gruesome than friendly.
Hi, guys.
I let out a heartbroken sob, which was probably not what Piper expected. Somehow I got to my feet, ignoring the searing pain in my ankles, and ran past her to the place where Crest lay, gurgling weakly.
Oh, brave friend.
My eyes burned with tears. I cared nothing for my own excruciating pain, the way my skin screamed when I tried to move. Crest's furry face was slack with shock. Blood speckled his snowy white fur. His midsection was a glistening mess. He clutched the ukulele as if it were the only thing anchoring him to the world of the living.
You saved us,
I said, choking on the words.
You bought us just enough time. I will find a way to heal you.
He locked eyes with me and managed to croak.
Music. God.
I laughed nervously.
Yes, my young friend. You are a music god. I will teach you every chord. We will have a concert with the nine muses when I get back to Olympus.
My voice faltered. Crest was no longer listening. His eyes had turned glassy, his tortured muscles relaxed. His body crumbled, collapsing inward until the ukulele sat on a pile of dust. A small, sad monument to my many failures. I don't know how long I knelt there, dazed and shaking. It hurt to sob. I sobbed anyway. Finally, Piper crouched next to me. Her face was sympathetic, but I thought somewhere behind her lovely multicolored eyes she was thinking, another life lost for your sake, Lester. Another death you couldn't fix. She did not say that. She sheathed her knife.
We grieve later, she said. Right now our job isn't done. Our job.
She had come to our aid, despite everything that had happened. Despite Jason. I could not fall apart now. At least no more than I had already. I picked up the ukulele. I was about to mutter some promise to Crest's dust. Then I remembered what came from my broken promises. I had vowed to teach the young Pandos any instrument he wished. Now he was dead. Despite the searing heat of the room, I felt the cold stare of Styx upon me. I leaned on Piper as she helped me across the room, back to the platform where Meg, Grover, and Herophily waited. The seven women warriors stood nearby, as if waiting for orders. Like their shields, their armor was fashioned from cleverly fitted planks of honey-gold wood. The women were imposing, each perhaps 7 feet tall. Their faces as polished and beautifully turned as their armor. Their hair, in various shades of white, blonde, gold, and pale brown, spilled down their backs in waterfall braids. Chlorophyll green tinted their eyes and the veins of their well-muscled limbs. They were dryads, but not like any dryads I'd ever met.
You're the Melii, I said.
The women regarded me with disturbingly keen interest, as if they would be equally delighted to fight me, dance with me, or toss me into the fire. The one on the far left spoke. We are the Meliae. Are you the Meg?
I blinked. I got the feeling they were looking for a yes, but as confused as I was pretty sure I was not the Meg.
Hey, guys,
Piper intervened, pointing to Meg.
This is Meg McCaffrey.
The Meliae broke into a double-time march, lifting their knees higher than was strictly necessary. They closed ranks, forming a semicircle in front of Meg like they were doing a marching band maneuver. They stopped, banged their spears once against their shields, then lowered their heads in respect.
All hail the Meg,
they cried.
Daughter of the Creator.
Grover and Herophily edged into the corner, as if trying to hide behind the Sybil's toilet. Meg studied the seven dryads. My young master's hair was windswept from the Ventus. The electrical tape had come off her glasses, so she looked like she was wearing mismatched rhinestone-encrusted monocles. Her clothes had once again been reduced to a collection of burned, shredded rags, all of which, in my opinion, made her look exactly like the Meg should look. She summoned her usual eloquence.
Hi.
Piper's mouth curved in the ghost of a smile.
I met these guys at the entrance to the maze. They were just charging in to find you.
Said they heard your song.
My song?
Meg asked.
The music!
Grover yelped. It worked?
We heard the call of nature,
cried the lead dryad. That had a different meaning for mortals, but I decided not to mention it.
We heard the pipes of a lord of the wild,
said another dryad.
That would be you, I suppose, Satyr. Hail, Satyr! Hail, Satyr!
The others echoed.
Yeah,
Grover said weakly.
Hail to you too. But mostly, said a third dryad, we heard the cry of the Meg, daughter of the Creator. Hail!
Hail!
The others echoed.
That was quite enough hailing for me.
Meg narrowed her eyes.
When you say Creator, do you mean my dad the botanist or my mom Demeter?
The dryads murmured among themselves. Finally, the leader spoke.
This is a most excellent point. We meant the McCaffrey, the great grower of dryads. But now we realize that you are also the daughter of Demeter. You are twice blessed, daughter of two creators. We are at your service.
Meg picked her nose.
At my service, huh?
She looked at me as if to ask, why can't you be a cool servant like this?
So, how did you guys find us?
We have many powers, shouted one. We were born from the Earth Mother's blood.
The primordial strength of life flows through us,
said another.
We nursed Zeus as a baby,
said a third.
We bore an entire race of men, the warlike bronze.
We are the Meliae, said a fourth.
We are the mighty ash trees,
cried the fifth. This left the last two without much to say. They simply muttered,
Ash. Yep, we're Ash.
Piper chimed in.
So Coach Hedge got Grover's message from the Cloud Nymph. Then I came to find you guys.
But I didn't know where this secret entrance was, so I went to downtown L.A. again.
By yourself?
Grover asked. Piper's eyes darkened. I realized she had come here first and foremost to get revenge on Medea. Secondly, to help us. Making it out alive, that had been a very distant third on her list of priorities.
Anyway, she continued, I met these ladies downtown and we sort of made an alliance.
Grover gulped.
But Cress said the main entrance would be a death trap,
It was heavily guarded.
Yeah, it was.
Piper pointed at the dryads.
Not anymore. The dryads looked pleased with themselves.
The ash is mighty, said one.
The others murmured in agreement. Hierophily stepped out from her hiding place behind the toilet.
But the fires. How did you...
Ha! Cried a dryad.
It would take more than the fires of a sun titan to destroy us.
She held up her shield. One corner was blackened, but the soot was already falling away, revealing new, unblemished wood underneath. Judging from Meg's scowl, I could tell her mind was working overtime. That made me nervous.
So, you guys serve me now? She asked.
The dryads banged their shields again in unison.
We will obey the commands of the Meg, said the leader.
Like, if I asked you to go get me some enchiladas.
We would ask how many, shouted another dryad.
And how hot you like your salsa. Meg nodded.
Cool. But first, maybe you could escort us safely out of the maze.
It shall be done, said the lead dryad.
Hold on, Piper said. What about...
She gestured to the floor tiles, where my golden nonsense words still glowed across the stone. While kneeling in chains, I hadn't really been able to appreciate their arrangement.
Bronze upon gold. East meets west. Legions are redeemed. Light the depths. One against many, never spirit defeated. Ancient words spoken, shaking old foundations. Destroy the tyrant, aid the winged. Under golden hills, great stallions foal. Hearken the trumpets, turn red tides. Enter stranger's home. Regain lost glory.
What does it mean? Grover asked, looking at me as if I had the faintest idea. My mind ached with exhaustion and sorrow. While Crest had distracted Medea, giving Piper time to arrive and save my friends' lives, I had been spouting nonsense. Two columns of text with a fiery margin down the middle. They weren't even formatted in an interesting font.
It means Apollo succeeded,
the Sybil said proudly.
He finished the prophecy.
I shook my head. But I didn't. Apollo faces death in Tarquin's tomb unless the doorway to the soundless god is opened by... All of that? Piper scanned the lines.
That's a lot of text. Should I write it down?
The Sybil's smile wavered.
You mean... You don't see it? It's right there.
Grover squinted at the golden words.
See what?
Oh.
Meg nodded.
Okay.
Yeah.
The seven dryads all leaned toward her, fascinated.
What does it mean, great daughter of the Creator? Asked the leader.
It's an acrostic,
Meg said.
Look.
She jogged to the upper left corner of the room. She walked along the first letter in each line, then hopped across the margin and walked the first letters of the lines in that column, all while saying the letters out loud.
B-E-L-L-O-N-A-S D-A-U-G-H-T-E-R. Wow.
Piper shook her head in amazement. I'm still not sure what the prophecy means about Tarquin and a soundless god and all that. But apparently you need the help of Bellona's daughter.
That means the senior praetor at Camp Jupiter.
Reina Avila Ramirez Arellano.
Chapter 44.
Ha ha ha, dryads? That straight from the horse's mouth. Goodbye, Mr. Horse. Hail the Meg! Cried the lead dryad. Hail the solver of the puzzle!
Hail!
The others agreed.
Followed by much kneeling, banging of spears on shields, and offers to retrieve enchiladas. I might have argued with Meg's hailworthiness, if I hadn't just been magically half-flayed to death in burning chains, I could have solved the puzzle. I was also pretty sure Meg hadn't known what an acrostic was until I explained it to her. But we had bigger problems. The chamber began to shake. Dust trickled from the ceiling. A few stone tiles fell and splashed into the pool of ichor.
We must leave, said Herophily. The prophecy is complete. I am free. This room will not survive.
I like leaving, Grover agreed. I liked leaving too. But there was one promise I still meant to keep, no matter how much Styx hated me. I knelt at the edge of the platform and stared into the fiery ichor.
Apollo?
Meg asked.
Should we pull him away? Asked a dryad.
Should we push him in? Asked another. Meg didn't respond.
Maybe she was weighing which offer sounded better.
I tried to focus on the fires below.
Helios, I murmured. Your imprisonment is over. Medea is dead. The ichor churned and flashed. I felt the Titan's half-conscious anger. Now that he was free, he seemed to be thinking why shouldn't he vent his power from these tunnels and turn the countryside into a wasteland. He probably also wasn't too happy about getting two pandai, some ragweed, and his evil granddaughter dumped into his nice fiery essence. You have a right to be angry, I said. But I remember you. Your brilliance, your warmth. I remember your friendship with the gods and the mortals of the earth. I can never be as great a sun deity as you were. But every day I try to honor your memory, to remember your best qualities. The ichor bubbled more rapidly. I am just talking to a friend, I told myself. This is not at all like convincing an intercontinental ballistic missile not to launch itself. I will endure, I told him. I will regain the sun chariot. As long as I drive it, you will be remembered. I will keep your old path across the sky steady and true. But you know more than anyone that the fires of the sun don't belong on the earth. They weren't meant to destroy the land, but to warm it. Caligula and Medea have twisted you into a weapon. Don't allow them to win. All you have to do is rest. Return to the ether of chaos, my old friend. Be at peace. The ichor turned white hot. I was sure my face was about to get an extreme dermal peel. Then the fiery essence fluttered and shimmered like a pool full of moth wings, and the ichor vanished. The heat dissipated. The stone tiles disintegrated into dust and rained into the empty pit. On my arms, the terrible burns faded. The split skin mended itself. The pain ebbed to a tolerable level of, I've just been tortured for 6 hours, agony. And I collapsed, shaking and cold on the stone floor. You did it! Grover cried. He looked at the dryads, then at Meg, and laughed in amazement. Can you feel it? The heat wave, the drought, the wildfires. They're gone. Indeed, said the lead dryad. The Meg's weakling servant has saved nature. Hail to the Meg!
Hail!
The other dryads chimed in. I didn't even have the energy to protest. The chamber rumbled more violently. A large crack zigzagged down the middle of the ceiling.
Let's get out of here.
Meg turned to the dryads. Help Apollo.
The Meg has spoken, said the lead dryad.
Two dryads hauled me to my feet and carried me between them. I tried to put weight on my feet, just for dignity's sake, but it was like roller skating on wheels of wet macaroni.
You know how to get there?
Grover asked the dryads.
We do now, said one. It is the quickest way back to nature, and that is something we can always find.
On a help I'm going to die scale, from 1 to 10, exiting the maze was a 10. But since everything else I'd done that week was a 15, it seemed like a piece of baklava. Tunnel roofs collapsed around us, floors crumbled. Monsters attacked, only to be stabbed to death by 7 eager dryads yelling, Hail! Finally we reached a narrow shaft that slanted upward toward a tiny square of sunlight.
This isn't the way we came in, Grover fretted.
It is close enough, said the lead dryad.
We will go first.
No one argued. The 7 dryads raised their shields and marched single file up the shaft. Piper and Herophily went next, followed by Meg and Grover. I brought up the rear, having recovered enough to crawl on my own, with a minimum of weeping and gasping. By the time I emerged into the sunlight and got to my feet, the battle lines had already been drawn. We were back in the old bear pit, though how the shaft led us there I didn't know. The Meliae had formed a shield wall around the tunnel entrance. Behind them stood the rest of my friends, weapons drawn. Above us, lining the ridge of the cement bowl, a 12 pandai waited with arrows nocked in their bows. In their midst stood the great white stallion Incitatus. When he saw me, he tossed his beautiful mane.
There he is at last. Medea couldn't close the deal, huh?
Medea is dead, I said. Unless you run away now, you will be next. Incitatus nickered.
Never liked that sorceress anyway. As for surrendering.
Lester, have you looked at yourself lately?
You're in no shape to issue threats.
We've got the high ground. You've seen how fast Pandai can shoot. I don't know who your pretty allies with the wooden armor are, but it doesn't matter. Come along quietly. Big C is sailing north to deal with your friends in the Bay Area, but we can catch up with the fleet easy enough. My boy has all kinds of special treats planned for you.
Piper snarled. I suspected that Herophily's hand on her shoulder was the only thing keeping the daughter of Aphrodite from charging the enemy all by herself. Meg's scimitars gleamed in the afternoon sun.
Hey, Ash ladies, she said. How fast can you get up there?
The leader glanced over.
Fast enough, oh Meg.
Cool,
Meg said. Then she shouted up at the horse and his troops.
Last chance to surrender.
Incitatus sighed.
Fine.
Fine, you surrender?
Meg asked.
No. Fine, we'll kill you. Pandai?
Dryads, attack!
Meg yelled.
Dryads?
Incitatus asked incredulously. It was the last thing he ever said. The Meliae leaped out of the pit as if it were no higher than a porch step. The 12 Pandai archers, fastest shots in the west, couldn't fire a single arrow before they were cut to dust by ashen spears. Incitatus whinnied in panic. As the Meliae surrounded him, he reared and kicked with his golden-shod hooves, but even his great strength was no match for the primordial killer tree spirits. The stallion buckled and fell, skewered from 7 directions at once. The dryads faced Meg.
The deed is done,
announced their leader.
Would the Meg like enchiladas now?
Next to me, Piper looked vaguely nauseous, as if vengeance had lost some of its appeal. I thought my voice was powerful. Grover whimpered in agreement.
I've never had nightmares about trees. That might change after today.
Even Meg looked uncomfortable, as if just realizing what sort of power she'd been given.
I was relieved to see that discomfort.
It was a sure sign that Meg remained a good person. Power makes good people uneasy, rather than joyful or boastful. That's why good people so rarely rise to power.
Let's get out of here, she decided.
To where shall we get out of here, oh Meg? Asked the lead dryad.
Home, said Meg. Palm Springs.
There was no bitterness in her voice as she put those words together. Home. Palm Springs. She needed to return, like the dryads, to her roots.
Chapter 45. Desert flowers bloom. Sunset rain sweetens the air. Time for a game show.
Piper did not accompany us. She said she had to get back to the Malibu house so as not to worry her father or the Hedge family. They would all be leaving for Oklahoma together tomorrow evening. Also, she had some arrangements to attend to. Her dark tone led me to believe she meant final arrangements, as in for Jason.
Meet me tomorrow afternoon.
She handed me a folded sheet of dandelion yellow paper. An NH Financial's eviction notice. On the back, she'd scribbled an address in Santa Monica.
We'll get you on your way.
I wasn't sure what she meant by that, but without explanation, she hiked toward the nearby golf course parking lot. No doubt to borrow a Bedrosian-quality vehicle. The rest of us returned to Palm Springs in the red Mercedes.
Hurrahfully drove. Who knew ancient oracles could drive?
Meg sat next to her. Grover and I took the back. I kept staring forlornly at my seat, where Crest had sat only a few hours before. So anxious to learn his chords and become a god of music. I may have cried. The seven Melii marched alongside our Mercedes like Secret Service agents, keeping up with us easily, even when we left bumper-to-bumper traffic behind. Despite our victory, we were a somber crew. No one offered any scintillating conversation. At one point, Hurrahfully tried to break the ice.
I spy with my little eye.
We responded in unison, no. After that, we rode in silence. The temperature outside cooled at least 15 degrees. A marine layer had rolled in over the Los Angeles basin like a giant wet duster, soaking up all the dry heat and smoke. When we reached San Bernardino, dark clouds swept the hilltops, dropping curtains of rain on the parched, fire-blackened hills. When we came over the pass and saw Palm Springs stretched out below us, Grover cried with happiness. The desert was carpeted in wildflowers. Marigolds and poppies, dandelions and primroses, all glistening from the rainfall that had just moved through, leaving the air cool and sweet. Dozens of dryads waited for us on the hilltop, outside the cistern. Aloe vera fussed over our wounds. Prickly Pear scowled and asked how we could possibly have ruined our clothes yet again. Reba was so delighted she tried to tango with me, though Caligula's sandals really were not designed for fancy footwork. The rest of the assembled host made a wide circle around the Melii, gawking at them in awe. Joshua hugged Meg so hard she squeaked.
You did it, he said. The fires are gone. You don't have to sound so surprised, she grumbled.
And these, he faced the Meliae. I saw them emerge from their saplings earlier today. They said they heard a song they had to follow. That was you?
Yep. Meg didn't appear to like the way Joshua was staring slack-jawed at the Ash Dryads. They're my new minions.
We are the Meliae,
the leader agreed. She knelt in front of Meg.
We require guidance, O Meg. Where shall we be rooted?
Rooted? Meg asked. But I thought...
We can remain on the hillside where you planted us, Great Meg, the leader said. But if you wish us to root elsewhere, you must decide quickly. We will soon be too large and strong to transplant.
I had a sudden image of us buying a pickup truck and filling the bed with dirt, then driving north to San Francisco with 7 killer ash trees. I liked that idea.
Unfortunately, I knew it wouldn't work. Trees were not big on road trips.
Meg scratched her ear.
If you guys stay here, you'll be okay? I mean, with the desert and all.
We will be fine, said the leader.
Though a little more shade and water would be best, said a second ash.
Joshua cleared his throat. He brushed his fingers self-consciously through his shaggy hair.
We, would be most honored to have you. The force of nature is already strong here, but with the Meliae among us.
Yeah,
Prickly Pear agreed.
Nobody would bother us ever again. We could grow in peace.
Aloe Vera studied the Meliae doubtfully. I imagine she didn't trust life forms that required so little healing.
How far is your range? How much territory can you protect?
A third Melia laughed.
We march today to Los Angeles. That was no hardship. If we are rooted here, we can protect everything within 100 leagues.
Reba stroked her dark hair.
Is that far enough to cover Argentina?
No, Grover said. But it would cover pretty much all of Southern California.
He turned to Meg.
What do you think?
Meg was so tired she was swaying like a sapling. I half expected her to mutter some Meg-ish answer like, "Don't know," and pass out. Instead, she gestured to the Meliae.
Come over here.
We all followed her to the edge of the cistern. Meg pointed down at the shady well, with its deep blue pond in the center.
What about around the pool?
She asked.
Shade? Water? I think my dad would have liked that.
The Creator's daughter has spoken, cried Amelia. Daughter of two creators, said another.
Twice blessed!
Wise solver of puzzles.
The Meg!
This left the last two with little to add, so they muttered.
Yep, the Meg, yep.
The other dryads murmured and nodded. Despite the fact that the ash trees would be taking over their enchilada-eating hangout, no one complained.
A sacred grove of ashes, I said.
I used to have one like that in ancient times.
Meg, it's perfect.
I faced the Sibyl, who had been standing silently in the back, no doubt stunned to be around so many people after her long captivity.
Herophily, I said, this grove will be well protected. No one. Not even Caligula could ever threaten you here. I won't tell you what to do. The choice is yours. But would you consider making this your new home?
Herophily wrapped her arms around herself. Her auburn hair was the same color as the desert hills in the afternoon light.
I wondered if she was thinking about how different this hillside was from the one where she was born, where she'd had her cave in Erythria.
I could be happy here,
she decided.
My initial thought, and this was just an idea, is that I heard they produce many game shows in Pasadena. I have several ideas for new ones.
Prickly Pear quivered.
How about you put a pin in that, darling? Join us.
Putting a pin in something was good advice coming from a cactus. Aloe Vera nodded.
We would be honored to have an oracle. You could warn me whenever anyone is about to get a cold.
We would welcome you with open arms, Joshua agreed. Except for those of us with prickly arms. They would probably just wave at you. Herophily smiled.
Very well. I would be...
Her voice seized up, as if she were about to start a new prophecy and send us all scrambling.
Okay,
I said. No need to thank us.
It's decided.
And so Palm Springs gained an oracle, while the rest of the world was saved from several new daytime TV game shows, like Sybil of Fortune or The Oracle is Right. It was a win-win. The rest of the evening was spent making a new camp down the hillside, eating takeout dinner. I chose the enchiladas verdes, thanks for asking, and assuring Aloe Vera that our layers of medicinal goop were thick enough. The Meliae dug up their own saplings and replanted them in the cistern, which I guessed was the dryad version of pulling yourself up by your own bootstraps. At sunset, their leader came to Meg and bowed low.
We will slumber now.
But whenever you call, if we are within range, we shall answer.
We shall protect this land in the name of the Meg.
Thanks, said the Meg, poetic as always. The Meliae faded into their seven ash trees, which now made a beautiful ring around the pond. Their branches glowed with a soft, buttery light. The other dryads moved across the hillside, enjoying the cool air and the stars and the smoke-free night sky, as they gave the Sybil a tour of her new home.
And here are some rocks, they told her. And over here, these are more rocks.
Grover sat down next to Meg and me with a contented sigh. The satyr had changed his clothes. A green cap, a fresh tie-dyed shirt, clean jeans, and a new pair of hoof-appropriate New Balance shoes. A backpack was slung on his shoulder. My heart sank to see him dressed for travel, though I was not surprised. Going somewhere? I asked. He grinned. Back to Camp Half-Blood.
Now?
Meg demanded. He spread his hands.
I've been here for years. Thanks to you guys, my work is finally actually done. I mean, I know you still have a long way to go, freeing the oracles and all, but...
He was too polite to finish the thought. But please do not ask me to go any farther with you. You deserve to go home, I said wistfully, wishing I could do the same. But you won't even rest the night? Grover got a faraway look in his eyes. I need to get back. Satyrs aren't dryads, but we have roots, too. Camp Half-Blood is mine. I've been gone too long. I hope Juniper hasn't gotten herself a new goat. I recalled the way the dryad Juniper had fretted and worried about her absent boyfriend when I was at camp. I doubt she could ever replace such an excellent satyr, I said. Thank you, Grover Underwood. We couldn't have succeeded without you and Walt Whitman. He laughed, but his expression immediately darkened. I'm just sorry about Jason. His gaze fell on the ukulele in my lap. I hadn't let it out of my sight since we returned. though I hadn't had the heart to tune the strings, much less play it.
Yes, I agreed. And Moneymaker. And all the others who perished trying to find the burning maze. Were in the fires. The drought.
Wow. For a second there I'd been feeling okay. Grover really knew how to kill a vibe.
His goatee quivered. I'm sure you guys will make it to Camp Jupiter, he said. I've never been there or met Raina, but I hear she's good people. My buddy Tyson the Cyclops is there too. Tell him I said hi.
I thought about what awaited us in the north. Aside from what we'd gleaned aboard Caligula's yacht, that his attack during the new moon had not gone well, we didn't know what was going on at Camp Jupiter. Or whether Leo Valdez was still there, or flying back to Indianapolis. All we knew was that Caligula, now without his stallion and his sorceress, was sailing to the Bay Area to deal with Camp Jupiter personally. We had to get there first.
We will be fine, I said, trying to convince myself.
We've wrested 3 oracles from the Triumvirate. Now, aside from Delphi itself, only one source of prophecy remains. The Sibylline books. Or rather, what Ella the Harpy is trying to reconstruct of them from memory.
Grover frowned.
Yeah, Ella. Tyson's girlfriend.
He sounded confused, as if it made no sense that a Cyclops would have a harpy girlfriend, much less one with a photographic memory who had somehow become our only link to books of prophecy that had burned up centuries before.
Very little of our situation made sense, but I was a former Olympian. I was used to incoherency.
Thanks, Grover.
Meg gave the satyr a hug and kissed him on the cheek, which was certainly more gratitude than she'd ever shown me.
You bet, Grover said.
Thank you, Meg.
You...
He gulped.
You've been a great friend.
I liked talking plants with you. I was also there, I said.
Grover smiled sheepishly.
He got to his feet and clicked together the chest straps of his backpack.
Sleep well, you guys,
and good luck. I have a feeling I'll see you again before...
Yeah.
Before I ascend into the heavens and regain my immortal throne? Before we all die in some miserable fashion at the hands of the Triumvirate? I wasn't sure. But after Grover left, I felt an empty place in my chest. As if the hole I'd poked with the arrow of Dodona were growing deeper and wider. I unlaced the sandals of Caligula and tossed them away. I slept miserably and had a miserable dream. I lay at the bottom of a cold, dark river. Above me floated a woman in black, silky robes. The goddess Styx, the living incarnation of the infernal waters.
My broken promises, she hissed.
A sob built in my throat. I did not need the reminder.
Jason Grace is dead,
she continued.
And the young Pandos.
Crest, I wanted to scream. He had a name.
Do you begin to feel the folly of your rash vow upon my waters?
Asked Styx.
There will be more deaths. My wrath will spare no one close to you until amends are made. Enjoy your time as a mortal, Apollo.
Water began filling my lungs, as if my body had just now remembered it needed oxygen. I woke up, gasping. Dawn was breaking over the desert. I was hugging my ukulele so tightly it had left gouge marks on my forearms and bruised my chest. Meg's sleeping bag was empty. but before I could look for her, she scrambled down the hill toward me. A strange, excited light in her eyes.
"Apollo, get up," she said. "You need to see this."
Chapter 46. Second prize, road trip. With Bon Jovi on cassette. First prize, please don't ask. The McCaffrey Mansion had been reborn. Or rather, regrown. Overnight, desert hardwoods had sprouted and grown at incredible speed, forming the beams and floors of a multi-level stilt house, much like the old one. Heavy vines had emerged from the stone ruins, weaving together the walls and ceilings, leaving room for windows and skylights shaded by awnings made of wisteria. The biggest difference in the new house: the great room had been built in a horseshoe shape around the cistern, leaving the ash grove open to the sky.
"We hope you like it,"
said Alavera, taking us on a tour.
"We all got together and decided it was the least we could do."
The interior was cool and comfortable, with fountains and running water in every room provided by living root pipes from subterranean springs. Blooming cacti and Joshua trees decorated the spaces. Massive branches had shaped themselves into furniture. Even Dr. McCaffrey's old work desk had been lovingly recreated. Meg sniffled, blinking furiously.
"Oh, dear," said Alavera. "I hope you're not allergic to the house."
"No. This place is amazing." Meg threw herself into Allo's arms, ignoring the dryad's many pointy bits.
"Wow,"
I said. Meg's poetry must have been rubbing off on me. How many nature spirits did it take to accomplish this? Allo shrugged modestly.
"Every dryad in the Mojave Desert wanted to help. You saved us all.
And you restored the Meliae." She gave Meg a gooey kiss on the cheek.
"Your father would be so proud. You have completed his work."
Meg blinked back tears.
"I just wish..."
She didn't need to finish. We all knew how many lives had not been saved.
"Will you stay?"
Allo asked.
"Aethelis is your home."
Meg gazed across the desert vista. I was terrified she would say yes. Her final command to me would be to continue my quests by myself. And this time she would mean it. Why shouldn't she? She had found her home. She had friends here, including 7 very powerful dryads who would hail her and bring her enchiladas every morning. She could become the protector of Southern California, far from Nero's grasp. She might find peace. The idea of being free from Meg would have delighted me just a few weeks ago. But now I found the idea insupportable. Yes, I wanted her to be happy, but I knew she had many things yet to do. First among them was facing Nero once again, closing that horrible chapter of her life by confronting and conquering the beast. Oh, and I also needed Meg's help. Call me selfish, but I couldn't imagine going on without her. Meg squeezed Allo's hand.
"Maybe someday. I hope so. But right now, we got places to be."
Grover had generously left us the Mercedes he'd borrowed from wherever. After saying our goodbyes to Herophily and the Dryads, who were discussing plans to create a giant Scrabble board floor in one of the back bedrooms at Aethelis, we drove to Santa Monica to find the address Piper had given me. I kept looking in the rearview mirror, wondering if the highway patrol would pull us over for car theft. That would have been the perfect end to my week. It took us a while to find the right address, a small private airfield near the Santa Monica waterfront. A security guard let us through the gates with no questions, as if he'd been expecting two teenagers in a possibly stolen red Mercedes. We drove straight onto the tarmac. A gleaming white Cessna was parked near the terminal, right next to Coach Hedges' yellow Pinto. I shuddered, wondering if we were trapped in an episode of The Oracle is Right. First prize, the Cessna. Second prize. No, I couldn't face the idea. Coach Hedge was changing baby Chuck's diaper on the hood of the Pinto, keeping Chuck distracted by letting him gnaw on a grenade. Which was probably just an empty casing. Probably. Melly stood next to him, supervising. When she saw us, she waved and gave us a sad smile. But she pointed toward the plane, where Piper stood at the base of the steps, talking with the pilot. In her hands, Piper held something large and flat. A display board. She had a couple of books under her arm, too. To her right, near the tail of the aircraft, the luggage compartment stood open. Ground crew members were carefully strapping down a large wooden box with brass fixtures. A coffin. As Meg and I walked up, the captain shook Piper's hand. His face was tight with sympathy.
Everything is in order, Miss McLean. I'll be on board doing pre-flight checks until our passengers are ready.
He gave us a quick nod, then climbed into the Cessna. Piper was dressed in faded denim jeans and a green camo tank top. She'd cut her hair in a shorter, choppier style. Probably because so much had been singed off anyway. Which gave her an eerie resemblance to Thalia Grace. Her multicolored eyes picked up the gray of the tarmac, so she might have been mistaken for a child of Athena. The display board she held was, of course, Jason's diorama of Temple Hill at Camp Jupiter. Tucked under her arm were Jason's two sketchbooks. A ball bearing lodged itself in my throat.
Ah. Yeah, she said. The school let me clear out his stuff.
I took the map as one might take the folded flag of a fallen soldier. Meg slid the sketchbooks into her knapsack.
You're off to Oklahoma? I asked,
pointing my chin toward the plane. Piper laughed.
Well, yes, but we're driving. My dad rented an SUV. He's waiting for the Hedges and me at DK's Donuts. She smiled sadly. First place he ever took me to breakfast when we moved out here.
Driving? Meg asked.
The plane is for you, too, Piper said. And Jason. Like I said, my dad had enough flight time and fuel credit for one last trip. I talked to him about sending Jason home. I mean, the home he had the longest in the Bay Area. And how you guys could escort him up there.
Dad agreed this was a much better use of the plane. We're happy to drive. I looked at the diorama of Temple Hill. All the little Monopoly tokens carefully labeled in Jason's hand. I read the label. Apollo. I could hear Jason's voice in my mind saying my name, asking me for one favor.
Whatever happens, when you get back to Olympus, when you're a god again, remember. Remember what it's like to be human.
This, I thought, was being human. Standing on the tarmac, watching mortals load the body of a friend and hero into the cargo hold. Knowing that he would never be coming back. Saying goodbye to a grieving young woman who had done everything to help us, and knowing you could never repay her. Never compensate her for all that she'd lost.
Piper, My voice seized up like the Sybil's.
It's fine, she said. Just get to Camp Jupiter safely. Let them give Jason the Roman burial he deserves. Stop Caligula. Her words weren't bitter, as I might have expected. They were simply arid, like Palm Springs air. No judgment, just natural heat. Meg glanced at the coffin in the cargo hold. She looked uneasy about flying with a dead companion. I couldn't blame her. I'd never invited Hades to go sun cruising with me for good reason. Mixing the underworld and the overworld was bad luck. Regardless, Meg muttered, "Thank you." Piper pulled the younger girl into a hug and kissed her forehead. "Don't mention it. And if you're ever in Tahlequah, come visit me, okay?" I thought about the millions of young people who prayed to me every year, hoping to leave their small hometowns across the world and come here to Los Angeles to make their huge dreams come true. Now Piper McLean was going the other way, leaving the glamour and the movie glitz of her father's former life, going back to small-town Tahlequah, Oklahoma. And she sounded at peace with it, as if she knew her own Ithales would be waiting there. Melly and Coach Hedge strolled over, baby Chuck still happily chewing his grenade in the coach's arms.
"Hey," Coach said. "You about ready, Piper? Long road ahead."
The satyr's expression was grim and determined. He looked at the coffin in the cargo bay, then quickly fixed his eyes on the tarmac. "Just about," Piper agreed. "You sure the Pinto is up for such a long trip?"
"Of course," Hedge said. "Just, you know, keep in sight, in case the SUV breaks down and you need my help."
Melly rolled her eyes. "Chuck and I are riding in the SUV." The coach harumphed.
"That's fine. It'll give me time to play my tunes. I've got Bon Jovi's entire collection on cassette."
I tried to smile encouragingly, though I decided to give Hades a new suggestion for the Fields of Punishment if I ever saw him again. Pinto, road trip, Bon Jovi on cassette. Meg bopped baby Chuck on the nose, which made him giggle and spit grenade shavings. "What are you guys going to do in Oklahoma?" she asked.
"Coach, of course," said the coach. "They've got some great varsity sports teams in Oklahoma. Plus, I hear nature is pretty strong there. Nice place to raise a kid."
"And there's always work for cloud nymphs," Melly said. "Everybody needs clouds." Meg stared into the sky, maybe wondering how many of those clouds were nymphs making minimum wage. Then suddenly her mouth fell open.
Guys?
She pointed north. A gleaming shape resolved against a line of white clouds. For a moment, I thought a small plane was making its final approach. Then its wings flapped. The ground crew scrambled into action as Festus the Bronze Dragon came in for a landing, Leo Valdez riding on his back. The crew waved their orange flashlight cones, guiding Festus to a spot next to the Cessna. None of the mortals seemed to find this at all unusual. One of the crew shouted up at Leo, asking if he needed any fuel. Leo grinned.
"Nah. But if you could give my boy a wash and wax and maybe find him some Tabasco sauce, that would be great."
Festus roared in approval. Leo Valdez climbed down and jogged toward us. Whatever adventures he may have had, he seemed to have come through with his curly black hair, his impish smile, and his small, elfish frame intact. He wore a purple t-shirt with gold words in Latin. "My cohort went to New Rome, and all I got was this lousy t-shirt."
"The party can now start," he announced. "There's my peeps."
I didn't know what to say. We all just stood there, stunned, as Leo gave us hugs.
Man, what's up with you guys?
He asked.